because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go.
God
bless. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, Wisconsin Eye's look at this week in the Capitol in politics. J.R., Assembly Republicans, just as they did 2 years ago, they got out ahead of Senate Republicans and maybe the governor with a little bit. They released this 30-page forward agenda.
Yes.
And is there a bit of an upstage here of the governor and Senate Republicans?
Well, I mean, this is part of the message. I mean, yes, it is about next session. Let's be honest. This is also about this fall and trying to lay out what they would do if they come back in majority. Now, we assume, looking at the maps, the numbers, the money, that Republicans will be back to the Assembly next session. So it's a good roadmap of what they're going to do. But again, this is, you know, it's September of election year. There's a reason behind doing this now.
But there's some very popular ideas that behind it. I mean, let's just talk about eight of them. Every freshman would have a computer or tablet.
No price tag.
With a price tag? No.
No price tag.
No price tag. But they did say this, that this would be part of the increase in state aid to help the school districts pay for it. Certificates of qualification for those convicted of a crime. If you learn a skill or a trade, Republicans soft on crime? What's up with that?
No, it's, I mean, let's be honest. We have a worker shortage in Wisconsin.
Yeah.
And what better way to get out of the cycle of crime than to get a good job that then leads to a better, more prosperous life? So it plays into that. I mean, they've talked about this, Republicans have, for a while, about trying to find ways to go in and find guys to teach these skills and get them, you know, it takes care of two issues. Jobs that are needed, and oh wait, fewer people in prison, that's a good thing too.
Right, but another part of this is they want to rework sentences, increase the penalties for serious crimes, and they're kind of saying maybe reduce the penalties for minor crimes. Do you see them, you and I have heard the people that want to reduce our prison population. Mm-hmm. There are X number of inmates on there, thousands for nonviolent offenses. Is this part of this deal? Can you see that?
Good question, because remember, truth in sentencing was done right before I got here, late 90s, and they've been trying to work their way through that for a long time, right? I mean, these sentences went from, well, it's 10 years of the maximum, but you're going to get three. They didn't adjust things. So there's been a lot of stuff with sentences that need to be kind of straightened out for a while, possibly.
And then, okay, now let's talk about the ongoing and perhaps a wider rift between the governor and Assembly Republicans on transportation. Their forward plan says user fees are equitable. One equitable way to offset the $939 million deficit looming in the transportation fund. Do you see this as them raising the ante on the issue?
Of everything in this document, this is by far the most probably problematic between the governor and some Republicans. It's also interesting to note that the governor rolled out his sales tax holiday the same day that they did this. So not the best timing in the minds of some Republicans, the governor do that. They felt a little bit slighted, if you will. But transportation, we've talked about it for months. It is the major rub. Everybody seems to be on board that K-12 get more money in the next budget. Everybody's on board that, you know, UW, we got to figure out something with them. You know, the first year of the freeze, that's pretty much an agreement, right? Medicaid, hey, you know, last update we got in July, things are looking okay, so that's going to be a priority. Transportation is going to be the rub. I mean, it's just a problem. It was last budget. Do you borrow more? Do you do less? The vibe that I'm getting talking to people in the Capitol is that the governor is going to go, okay, we're going to see this on the 15th, Thursday, I believe, next week.
Yep.
We will get an outline from DOT.
This is DOT, which is going to laundry list all the projects that would be put on hold if they have to live within the current revenue stream.
And the going thought is that that budget proposal is going to have a priority of pumping money to local road projects, maintenance and safety, if you will, really de-emphasize mega projects in southeastern Wisconsin, pull back from that dramatically, redirect that money and then say, okay, look, we're taking care of local roads. We're taking care of them. What's the issue? Why do you want to raise taxes if we're taking care of these things? That'll put the onus back on some Republicans say, oh, well, we want to raise taxes to do 94 east, west, north, south. That might be the path, if you will, they push.
Those lawmakers from the WOW counties, Waukesha, Ozaukee, Washington.
So that might be the push because, let's be honest, while leadership is there in the Assembly caucus, GOP caucus, the rank and file are not. You know, when I talk to members who are from southeastern Wisconsin, they're not looking for a tax hike. You know, these real conservative members, they're not going, we want to raise revenues. They want to find, well, where can we save money first? That's the big, where do we save money first before we even think about revenue uppers? So that's still an issue.
And there's a comment that we should eliminate roundabouts. That's not going to make up the $939 million deficit. Okay, let's highlight four more parts of the forward plan. Teacher Protection Act and new training if you want to teach in an urban district. That's pretty interesting.
Well, again, Republicans are trying to find ideas. I mean, there is a rub, too, between largely Caucasian Republicans from the suburbs telling a largely African-American district in Milwaukee how to run things. But there are guys like Dale Coyenga, Alberta Darling, who are trying to find answers that they think will help Milwaukee. These go into those issues. But again, there's this rub of, can they be partners in this discussion, or will it be people saying, you are going to do this, and Milwaukee saying, we don't like your idea?
More police officers. Now, why couldn't there be a press conference, joint press conference of the governor saying, my next budget is going to include more police officers, and then Speaker Voss and Majority Leader Steinicke step up and say, our budget, we agree with the governor. So why did Assembly Republicans go out there with more, promising more Milwaukee police officers without the governor?
Good question. Tom Barrett was out before them saying, my next budget will include more police officers. So the message has been delivered that safety is going to be a priority in the state's largest city. And it's an obvious approach after what happened in Sherman Park, you know, a few weeks ago.
Right. Long-term care investment fund. Now, this, I find this interesting when you actually go through the 30 pages. They are saying if people are able to set aside funds to pay for future medical costs, that will delay the time when they have to rely on Medicaid, which, as you know, one in five Wisconsin residents now get health care through Medicaid. I find that kind of an interesting proposal. Any PSs on that?
They're looking to bend the cost curve. Medicaid is a driver in our budget. It has been for a long time. And with a graying state, that the Taxpayers Alliance showed we're not really gaining migration, immigration-wise, this week. We're not really growing as fast as other places. Unless we find some solutions, that's going to be a bigger problem than it is.
And about a year ago, I asked the Wisconsin Department of Transportation, have you got anybody running point on the idea of driverless vehicles? And they said, well, no. But now the Assembly Republicans want to fund UW research to test and permit self-driving vehicles on Wisconsin highways. They're out there again leading on that issue. Any of the eight I didn't highlight, do you want to, that comes to mind? Anything
no.
else?
I mean, what's not in there, you know, is the kind of the question, right?
Well, yeah. And let's go to what Peter Barca said. Democratic leader Barca said, we're ninth in job creation out of 10 Midwestern states over the last 5 years. We're dead last in the nation when it comes to startup activity. The GOP agenda shows no real initiatives that will get us from the bottom third to the top third. But now, go back to what you said. As Peter said, we don't know what Republicans are not announcing. And his two examples of what they didn't announce 2 years ago, right to work and prevailing wage.
And there's another push on prevailing wage in context of the transportation debate. Conservative members of the caucus, both caucuses, want to look at, if we're going to save money in road projects, do we go all the way with prevailing wage and try and do more with it? So that'll be, I don't know if that gets full through the houses, but there will be another discussion about that issue, I think, next session.
As I got ready for the show, I began to think, what isn't in here, you know, following Barca's logic? There's no reference in here to repeal a minimum markup, you know, the lawsuit that we talked about. The transgender rights issue is not in there.
That bill's not going away. Jesse has already said he's going to bring bring it back. So
yeah. And finally, the that very emotional ban on the sale of fetal tissue. That's not in there.
No, and you know, it's been clear that leadership is not really interested in the Assembly, especially in that because they can't find a compromise. There is a dedicated group of lawmakers who really are passionate about that issue and want that done, but leadership's going, it's not going to sell well, and we have members who don't like it, and we're not putting them through that vote unless we get a compromise.
So on the same day that Assembly Republicans rolled out their forward agenda, the governor then said, I'm going to go to the Green Bay and Milwaukee media markets to talk about my sales tax holiday, and it would be part of the fall of 2017 and then again 18.
Then sunset to evaluate how things go. But you know how things, when you tax sunset. Break sunset?
Yeah, right. never happens. So that holiday would be on the first August weekend in 2017, 2018. No sales tax on school supplies, computers costing less than $750, clothes costing less than $75. It would save parents and other consumers $11 million in state sales tax and $1 million in local sales tax. But I thought you reported that Speaker Voss said this was kind of our idea.
Well, this idea has floated for years, let's be honest. I mean,
it's been out there.
Not first time. Lawmakers in both houses, Republicans, proposed a sales tax holiday. this session. Slightly higher price tag because they would have exempted computers up to $2,000, I think, rather than $750.
Yep, you're right.
There's like $13.2 plus $100 million in local revenue. So it's been out there before, but it hasn't quite caught fire. So putting the budget, that should breathe new life into it, get it moving. Senator Fitzgerald's office said, well, we're going to have to talk about it. That's kind of the Fitzgerald MO, if you will, that my caucus kind of see what look over this for a while and figure out where they're at, and then we can tell you if we're going to be able to do it or not. But putting the budget makes it harder to take it out. Now, one of the interesting questions is, Governor Walker said in the State of the State, every dime I can find in savings, this next budget to go toward K-12 education.
Yes.
So why take $11 out of that pot and say we're going to go give you a sales tax holiday when I could have put that in K-12? Well, they're feeling pretty good, I think, the Walker administration about revenue. Even though it came in, what, $85 million off last week, 0.6% off. Looking at Medicaid going, okay, in July we saw we're like $175 million in GPR to the good, $400 million all funds. So we're feeling okay about that. We're feeling more optimistic about revenue than the other people are. So we can do this. And we can find a way to make this happen. So it'll be interesting to watch how these pieces all fit together when the budget's put out in
I want to stay on this
February.
For two more questions. Why doesn't Senator Fitzgerald's caucus come up with their own forward agenda? And how would you describe relations between Assembly Republicans and the Gov right now?
Assembly Republicans and the Gov, there's been some tension for a while. But it's been for both houses. I'll go back, and this all goes back to the presidential bid, right? He kind of left the state. They felt like they were left to try and fix the budget on their own, working with his then chief of staff and other people in the administration. So there's this kind of like, the kids had the keys for a while, and they're like, well, we've done this.
We kind of like driving this car.
Yeah. So, in Senate Republicans, it's a different caucus. It's just a different body than what the Assembly GOP is. There's a little bit more top-down, if you will. I mean, not that these guys don't have input on what's going on, but Voss and Steinicke and these guys, they're a little bit more, we've got a unified message, you know, we're going to go out there with these 63 they have.
Yep.
The Senate has a much different dynamic where you have these wings that are trying to get to their places that they're happy with things. So, yep. Fitzgerald has more of a sift and winnow, if you will, process. Let this settle for a while. We'll get to the point eventually, but they got to hash it out before we get there.
Yeah, you want to talk about Senate Republican wings. There's a reference in the forward plan of Assembly Republicans to exploring or reviewing the idea of a federal constitutional convention, which is the Senator Chris Kapinga idea.
Yes.
So they kind of make a reference to that. I am intrigued by our Supreme Court is newly constituted with the addition of Justice Dan Kelly. And they heard a pretty fascinating case last week. And it's this. In 2009, then Waukesha County District Attorney Schimmel gave a tutorial on how to catch child pornographers and how to catch ICAC, internet criminals who target children. So he made a tape. And then in 2013, he talked about another training tape, the hideous sextortion case involving up to 40 juveniles. The issue here is, should these training tapes become public? And I think it's worth, because it's such an interesting open record case, the whole argument lasted about 70 minutes, but let's take 3 minutes and listen to the back and forth. And I want to tell you who the players are. The first voice you're going to hear is the Assistant Attorney General, arguing that the training video should be secret. The second you're going to hear is the new Justice Dan Kelly. The third you're going to hear is the lawyer for the Democratic Party of Wisconsin, and I want to come back to that, Michael Bauer, a former Assistant Attorney General under then AG Peg Lautenschlager. And then you're going to hear Chief Justice Rogan Zach. So that's who you're going to hear for the next 3 minutes. It's worth listening to.
And if this video was posted on a Reddit or some other forum frequented by child pedophiles, frequented by child pornographers, whether seeing that video, whether seeing those aspects that we pointed out in the timestamps would be helpful to that individual in attempting to evade capture and prosecution by Wisconsin law enforcement personnel. There's a presumption of openness there, but there can also be a strong public policy in capturing sexual predators. So the record custodian, in the first instance, makes that weighing. Open records, very important policies on one hand. Capturing sexual predators, very important policies on the other hand.
How are we to judge the material in this tape to determine whether what's disclosed there would hamper. We don't necessarily have expertise in ferreting out crime. How do we determine what is going to unnecessarily and unreasonably hamper the ability of our law enforcement officers to capture these criminals?
If you look at that 2009 videotape, you come away with what's so novel and to be protected here. It really is basic, well-known investigative techniques used by law enforcement that, frankly, you get in a lot more detail, as the trial court mentioned, by not only Catch the Predator TV shows, but, you know, there's a host of them that you can watch that not a single victim was named or identified in that training video.
Counsel, I watched the video, and I would agree with you that they weren't named. I don't agree with you that you couldn't identify who they were, because it said what high school they went, it said the dates that they were at that high school, it said the dates on which the crime occurred. If you went back and you looked back at the old papers that were put out at that time, you would find initials, which are not used in the video, but there were, according to what I've read, a concern that students would be able to identify other students, and in fact, at the time, that did occur, with some students identifying who had been a victim in this 39 or 37 student operation that was going on. So to say they couldn't be identified, they don't have the names, but I don't agree you couldn't identify who those people were if you wanted to figure it out.
One of the factors that we look at is, has this information been out there in other forms before? And whether we like it or not, the reality is this information has been out there in much more detailed fashion in newspaper articles, magazine articles, many of which the District Attorney Schimmel participated in interviews in the criminal complaint and other public documents.
JR, I want to stay on this. Thank you, viewers, for bearing with us for 3 minutes. It was very interesting. First thing I want to ask, Dan Kelly, I counted, in the first hour of oral arguments on this case, asked 7 questions. Now, what's your theory on why he has clearly sent a message, I'm going to be both seen and heard?
Well, when the finalists were named for that appointment and there was kind of talk about what their strengths was, one of the vibes about Kelly was that the kind of intellectual conservative wing of the legal community wanted a thought leader, somebody who would be not just a reliable vote from the conservative point of view, but would also set an agenda or set a intellectual agenda, if you will, in the court and really kind of drive opinions that would be, more than just a vote. And maybe that's part of what's coming out here, that he is going to be that kind of a justice on the bench.
Well, he served notice with 7 questions. Second, help me understand this. Why does the Democratic Party want these tapes so badly? They want it to circuit court level. They want it to Court of Appeals. Why are they taking it up?
When they originally asked for them back in 2014, the thought was that there was possibly something embarrassing that Schimmel said or did on these tapes that they would then possibly use in the 2014 election. Now, I haven't seen them. I can't tell you what it possibly could be, but that was the thought at the time of why they wanted them. So, you know, they started it. They're going to finish it, it looks like. Now, they won at both those levels. What happens here? And will you see an interesting stance or a message from the Supreme Court now, Open Records, with this case?
Well, there was reference when this case was argued to Wisconsin having a strong open records, open meetings law, but also a balancing test. I mean, the one attorney said, yes, we have we tend to err on the side of openness, but in this case, when you're protecting the identity of children and possible police techniques to catch, you know, predators and things like that, it's just a fascinating case. I really find it interesting. JR, you noted that new topic. Senator Ron Johnson is going back to 2010, mm-hmm. The playbook. Explain that.
So new ad out this week. First time Johnson's been on the air, I believe, in 2 weeks. He went back to the whiteboard, essentially. And now if you go back to 2010, one of the ads he had the most praise for had him in a whiteboard saying there are 100 members of the U.S. Senate and there are no manufacturers. I'm one, though. And you've got all these career politicians or lawyers, and that's great if you want to settle a lawsuit, but if you want to fix problems, hire me. The new tact is the same kind of like, here it was in 2010, here it is in 2016, with still way too many career politicians, and you know, Russ Feingold wants to be another one to join that club, but I'm here as a manufacturer and a fixer of issues, if you will. And what's interesting are a couple of things. One, the Johnson people are kind of happy with this ad. They think this is capturing, as they call it, the magic of 2010, when Ron Johnson announced kind of late in the spring he's going to run, ran what was a very pitch-perfect campaign in the environment that it was in 2010, and beat an incumbent in a Republican wave year. They feel like this is setting him back up to do that again, to win this seat, to beat Feingold again. The other thought I get from people is that it's a different environment in 2010. It's a different electorate from 2010. And oh, by the way, you've now been in office for 6 years. Have you fixed the problem you talked about 6 years ago?
Yeah.
The other thing is you got to look kind of longer view the next 2 months. Ron Johnson struggled with his name ID in all these polls from Marquette and everybody else, right? There's a rule of thumb I used to always hear in politics was that you had to be known before you went negative. So maybe this is getting Ron Johnson's, or trying to get Ron Johnson's positive numbers back, go get up. Then the bombardment will come out, Russ Feingold. Because you're seeing this week and last week, Republicans making a lot of smoke about, you know, Feingold's ethics. It's like a complaint filed if the feds that he filed the Hatch Act, which, as we talked last week, probably not going to go anywhere because the only penalty really is for a current employee, and Feingold's not a current employee. They called on Feingold to release his records because his FOIA request filed with the State Department won't be fulfilled until December. Well, Feingold doesn't have the records, the campaign says, so he can't release them, waiting to see if the State Department will speed up or anything like that. So there are all these things about ethics, and that's what I think you're going to see from Johnson folks are Russ Feingold's an ethical problem, and they're going to hit him on national security. Those are the things I see being teed up right now.
And you and I probably spent a little bit of time this morning watching Feingold's newest ad, mm-hmm. where he points out all the times where Ron Johnson said, I'm not going to tell you how I feel about Trans-Pacific Partnership.
And the Feingold messaging has been interesting because I also get two trains of thought about that. One has been from critics that was all over the place. He's talking about equal pay for women. He's talking about student loans. He's talking about, you know, Ron Johnson's off a big sweetheart corporate payout. They feel like it's too all over the board. It's not like a central theme. The Feingold folks go, no. The 10,000-foot view is this all plays into Ron Johnson's not for you. And every one of those ads points out, and it touches a, if you will, a population in this Feingold coalition,
yeah.
that there's not like a single point that they rally around, but they each have their issue with Johnson, and Feingold's touching, he's just population, keep that coalition together for November.
Yeah. Okay, I agree with you. Okay, time for the Wisconsin stock picks.
Herb Kohl rising, he made a lot of teachers happy this week.
Yes, he did.
Herb Kohl is a very wealthy man, has a foundation set up, and there's this crowdfunding site where if you're a teacher and you want stuff for your classroom, you can put a request up there. Well, everything posted in Wisconsin at 12:01 a.m. on Tuesday got paid for. His foundation only is about $500,000, which, knowing Herb Kohl's wealth, probably wasn't like a bat of an eye. But still, that is another example of Kohl's generosity, his commitment to Wisconsin. I mean, look at the things he did. $100 million for the Bucks Arena. Was it $25 million toward the Kohl Center on the UW-Madison campus years ago? This is a guy who's given back to Wisconsin, if you will.
Kohl Center, which Ed Garvey once called the biggest yard sign in Wisconsin. Excuse me, go ahead, Mix.
The UW system. So you've got a couple things going on here. One, Robin Voss, Speaker of the Assembly, wrote this column saying, you guys need more diversity who you bring on campus. It was kind of like a shot across the bow.
Yep.
The Regents are saying, or UW officials saying, hey, we got the message. By the way, the Regents passed this like freedom or diversity, you know, kind of message back in December. We've got you there. But oh, by the way, we hope you guys catch our message on the freeze. It is clear from talking to people in the Capitol that the first year of the budget, there will be a freeze for what would be, what, 17, 18? What happens in 18, 19, though?
Right.
Will there be a point where lawmakers and governors say, you know what, we don't want to have the responsibility of when, at some point, tuition will go up. Do we want to do it or give it back to the Regents and say, okay, well, they raise their tuition. Now, for the Regents, can they say, we have a responsible plan of it would only be inflation, for example. Can they prove that they're ready to take that power back? Another piece of it is funding. What's going to happen to this budget with their funding? They're out there talking about, you know, we want the $42.5 million, but that's on top of the lapse going away, which for those at home don't know what a lapse is, the state says, I give you $50 million,
you
I take
back
$25 million.
Right.
So the lapse goes away. They want that.
They
plus
can keep that $50 million.
Plus comp reserves, plus financially. So what's going to happen? I get the impression that UW, they don't want to cut UW anymore, but will they give them the full request, or will they kind of be held harmless? That's going to be the question that's coming up for them, because it's obvious K-12 is a priority, Medicaid, roads, UW, it's kind of worked its way back up there, I think.
But just go back to the freeze a little bit. If you continue to freeze resident undergrad tuition, it'll be the fifth year in 17-18,
yep.
And then the question is, do you continue that in the 18-19
yeah.
year?
And at some point, it has to go up. You can't do it forever. So how do you address that?
Okay. And then falling.
Green Bay Mayor Schmidt charged with 3 misdemeanors for problems with campaign finance reports. This kind of all percolated back, I think it was last spring or something like that, where there were some odd filings on his campaign finance reports. They supported a special prosecutor out of the Milwaukee DA's office about the charges. They reached a plea deal. What's interesting is, one, critics are calling for Schmidt to resign. There's no indication he's going to do that. And two, there really isn't a message from Schmidt of he's taking responsibility and saying, yeah, I screwed up. You know, he's saying, I understand the evidence they're presenting, but not the conclusions. It's not a guy who's saying, yeah, I take full responsibility for what happened. I can't make my support, and I'm going to clean up the mess.
But this was a plea deal. This was investigated by senior Milwaukee County
yes.
assistant DA, mm-hmm. Mr. Landgraf.
Yes.
He played a big role in those John Does.
Yep.
And so he signed off on this plea deal, 3 misdemeanors, but Mayor Schmidt did not have a good week.
No.
I understand. I think, JR, it's about time where next week we handicap some of the key ledge races.
Yes.
I've interviewed 60 of those candidates, which all those interviews are on WISSIDE.org. Time for a plug. So let's handicap some of those next week.
We won't talk about 60 races, though. I promise you that.
I promise you that. I'm Steve Walders.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for September 9th.